Good morning. How are you? Good. Good. Are you okay? Yeah. It is nice weather. The seasons are changing, though, it feels. But it's supposed to warm up again now tomorrow. I think tomorrow's supposed to be warm again. Is it going to get warm today, later? Yeah. 80 today? Wow, it was 61 when I got up this morning. I like that too. That's my favorite. What else about the weather? We don't really have anything else to cover today. Okay, it changes. Okay, good. All right. We have had good rain.
Yes, our lawn.
Not this year. No, not this year. Especially around here, your soil here in Marathon County is very sandy, and so. Oh, maybe not everyone's. What's your soil like? Oh, you have clay soil here in Marathon? I don't know where you live. Everything that we have walked on ourselves feels a lot like sand. Where we have real heavy, we have clay loam soil where we live. And so it holds water for days and days. It's been hard for us to get back and mow it because you have these really small windows between when it's dry enough to mow and the next rain. And they're very small windows, so we've had those occasions where you have to mow it really high, and then you mow it immediately, two notches lower. So we've had some of those occurrences this summer. So lawn care and weather, what else you got?
I want to know where you're at in the sale of your home.
Yes.
Are you relocating? Are you?
Yes, that is such a good question. So let me explain to you tonight at 7 o'clock. The answer to that specific question. So item number one on our agenda tonight for the Fireside Chat is a brief update on how we're coming in our transition with housing. It's an exciting update because there's a lot happening, but I'm not going to tell you now.
Because all I can think of on Sunday morning when I wake up, empty my laundry basket and get all my clothes ready to come to Emmanuel so that my kids can all change clothes once they get here.
Yeah, that was about 2 months, 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah, but then there's been some adjustment. And this week is exciting because there's another adjustment. So, but you have to come tonight to hear it. I can tell you it's super exciting. I mean, you'll be.
And there's no Packer game on, so we're safe.
Yes, we looked at that. All right. Very good. Let's pray, okay? Father, you are always good and good in every way. And so we pray to you this morning for recognizing the blessing from your hand that is this very get-together. This moment is a good gift from your hand. And so we glorify you as the giver of good and undeserving gifts, that we would have brothers and sisters that we can sit in a room like this and discuss the church that you've purchased with the blood of Christ. Father, thank you so much for this blessing. Make us to be aware of it. Make us to be conscious of its magnitude. And I pray that we would be diligent stewards. We need to give careful thought to what we will do in pursuing the instruction of your word. And so we begin with prayer, God, asking your spirit to give us a bolder comprehension of what we know to be true in your word. In Christ Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Okay. Today, I want to start with something I think is important for us to bring back to the front of our mind. This is the last in our 3-month series on this church polity Sunday school. This is the last one. And thinking about the punctuation of it, I want to provide for you something of a reminder. And that is this. We have to be careful not to be selfish, but mindful of our opportunity to serve. Okay? What I mean by that is we are considering the steps toward plurality of eldership, and we don't have the budget resource to add the eldership in paid staff. So we find the biblical provision for adding eldership in non-paid staff. non-paid pastoral staff volunteering as elders could provoke a selfishness in us. We could think, wait a minute, you're saying that we're going to pick up 3 or 4 pastors and not add to our church budget? This sounds great. These guys are going to do all this stuff for us. They're going to help make sure that I'm getting regular visits in the hospital. When my marriage is struggling, these guys are going to come along and invest in my life so that my marriage will be stronger. These guys are going to volunteer to teach and preach on a regular basis. They're going to give up an evening regularly to come in and meet and talk about church life and feed vision into how we can disciple better. And they're going to do it all for free. And you can see how that would provoke a little bit of selfishness if we're not careful. But here's what has to be remembered. This congregational elder provision is not just about them giving us something. It is about us giving them something. Here's the question. Where do pastors come from? Pastor school. The elder factory. There's an elder factory. They're just cranking them out. Right next to the tooth fairy factory. Yeah, yeah. Where do pastors come from? Where did I come from? Out of the congregation. That's how I got here today. I came out of a congregation. Do you realize 98% of the churches in the United States have less than 200 people? 98% of the churches have less than 200 people. A large majority of that 98% has a fraction of that 200 people. Emmanuel sits here today in a 2% category, double that. I don't know the statistics on how many churches have 400 people. If 98% have less than 200, could we argue that 99% have less than 400? So here sits Emmanuel. Is Emmanuel equipped and therefore responsible to be training pastors? Definitely. Most definitely. So, in the next few months, I am going to give you names of men. And as you consider those names, what should be on your mind is not just, are these guys 100% prepared to be pastors? Because the answer is no. The question should be, are these guys pointed in the right direction for pastorship? And could our congregation facilitate growth in that? So could we, in the next few decades, see men who had been lay elders at Emmanuel go off somewhere up to, what's the next little burg if I went north from here? North of Marathon, or north of Merrill, north of that. Irma. What? Irma. All right. I'm thinking of a small, Irma, tiny. Okay. Irma, I don't know if Irma has an evangelical church. Let's say it does. Let's say Irma's got a tiny little evangelical church, and we have a man who has been working here as an elder for 12 years. And he finds out that the little evangelical church in Irma needs a pastor. They don't have any. And he says, congregation, I feel like I have an opportunity to go up and serve them as their pastor. And we say, we helped train that guy to go and do that. And he doesn't have to take a shortcut or the scenic route and go through the seminary to get there, because he's been adequately trained here to go there and shepherd 30, 40, 50 souls. So let's be careful as we move ahead that it's not just selfish, because it could be. I can tell you it is for me, right? There's a big selfish part of me that's really looking forward to this. But let's make sure it's service. So not just selfish, but service. So as you rate those candidates, I'm going to give you names and you're going to go, ugh, that's a 6. That's probably true. But please embrace the reality that it's your responsibility to make it a 9. It's your responsibility to make it a 9. In light of that, you say, yeah, but boy, these guys aren't, they're not trained, they're not educated, they haven't got the degrees and certificates. Let me tell you that the person who stands here today teaching this class has been brought from a low number to wherever that number may be today, in large part because of a congregation in Greenwood. When I left Greenwood, I explained to them, I said, if the 28-year-old version of me showed up today as a candidate for their next pastor, they would say no. Because we grew together. I grew in who I was as a pastor because of that congregation. They grew as a congregation because of who I was as a pastor. But if the 28-year-old version of me walked into Missionary Baptist Church in Greenwood today and said, I want to be considered as your next pastor, they would go, thank you for offering, but no. I mean, the me at 28 years old who walked in there, who had all sorts of baggage, unsecured idealism, inexperience, and they paid me. I didn't touch anything, ever. I went in there as a 28-year-old young guy who couldn't wait to be 30, by the way. I thought 28 was way too young to be a senior pastor. And because of that congregation, went from whatever number that was, which I'm almost embarrassed to estimate, to whatever number it is today, which I'm still embarrassed to estimate. But it was because of that congregation, because they weren't just selfish saying, hey, we're going to get a pastor and he's going to take care of everything, but they were serving. We're going to get a brother who we're going to lock arms with and grow together with. And that's exactly what happened. Okay? So does that make sense? To guard ourselves against the selfishness of saying, hey, we're Emmanuel, we deserve tens, and these lay elders are sixes and sevens. And instead, consciously commit ourselves to serving that six and saying, by God's grace, we'll be used to see a nine come out of that. Okay? So that's where I want to start today. Just reminding us as we talk about men who will volunteer in nurturing our own soul in discipleship, let's be careful that it doesn't become something selfish. Okay? And let's remember that it's about serving too. So now, let's walk through these steps. How hard is this to see? Linnell, can you see it from here? Okay. You okay? Okay. And I know it's very hard to see. Yeah, it seems to me like the eyes are better over here than over there. Uh-huh, I feel like that's true. Oh! That's good, that's good. There's the chalkboard. He just realized we had a whiteboard. I hate to break it to you, but it has words on it. All right, so these are the steps, as I have laid them out, in recommendation for you. I am hoping to lead the congregation in this calendar year through these steps. I don't want to be vague. I want to be specific. I am hoping in this calendar year to lead the congregation through these steps. I want to be clear. I want to be patient. I want to be filled with prayer. But this is the plan as I would introduce it to you. Not introduce it, we've talked about it the last 2 weeks. As I would review it today. One, teach a class on church polity. Teach a class on church polity. Check. That's where we've been. A class on church polity. To summarize, the question was, has the Bible given us both prescriptive and descriptive leadership into a benefit of plurality of eldership, including lay eldership? That was the question. Two, enlist the assistance of the search committee because at present we only have two elders. Therefore, I thought it was wise to enlist the group that you had entrusted with pastoral search to give us input on lay pastors as well. That has been done. Check. No, not completely. Remember that last week? The check that wasn't completed? I had to erase a little bit. We will ask that search committee to also meet with the names that are gathered and then edited down to a short list, we will ask the search committee to meet with them the way they will with the family life pastor in time. Third, ask the congregation to amend the Constitution. The Constitution will need to be clarified, not changed, but it will need to be clarified. We don't need a constitutional change to have pastors here, correct? So we're looking for a family life pastor. We have no need to change the Constitution, right? We have, let's say we have Dave. Dave comes in and he's going to be a non-paid pastor. Do we need to change the Constitution in order to have a pastor that's paid versus a pastor that's not paid? No, because the Constitution doesn't say anything about payment. The Constitution doesn't indicate how much payment has to be given. So we don't have to change the Constitution, but I think we should clarify the Constitution by stating for future generations that we don't conclude that every pastor has to be financially compensated, but that some pastors are lay pastors. And that those lay pastors, because most often they will be serving two vocations, they should be required to take a sabbatical. That would be a change. Because right now, the paid pastors are not required to take sabbatical. What did she say? I cleared my throat twice. When I did not get one at Greenwood either, and I left. The deacons. Yes. It was the one day between there and here. A group of four very sweet men came and sat in my house late one evening after I had told them I was going to be coming to Emmanuel. Deacons, all of them. And they sat down, and the first question out of their mouth is, they said, if we had given you sabbatical, would you have stayed? I said, no. I said, it didn't make a difference. I said, this is just God's timing and God's plan. So there will be some amendment to the Constitution. For instance, right now there's a process that's spelled out about preaching, or not necessarily preaching, because Mike didn't preach when he came. Mike did a musical ministry. What did you call it? A concert? Okay. You remember that? You remember when Mike came and he did a, probably on a Sunday night? You remember that? Not very memorable? Okay. Mike? So when Mike came, he didn't preach because that wasn't what he was being called to do. He wasn't called to be the primary preaching pastor. However, when I came, I preached and taught. Did I teach Sunday school or did I just meet during Sunday school? Did I teach something? Not very memorable. Okay, it was so long ago. Yeah, almost. So we will have to make an amendment to the Constitution. I am going to suggest to deacons, who I think are responsible somewhat for this verbiage, okay, it's constitutional. I think that they have some responsibility in that. It's I think they are. So I would say to them something like, the congregation recognizes that not every pastor is a paid pastor, but that there are occasions that where the church benefits from lay eldership. And should the present elders acknowledge the giftedness of eldership in one of the men of IBC, they would recommend that man to the congregation, who would then be responsible for affirming him. In the event that he is affirmed as an elder of IBC, he would be asked to take a sabbatical every 4 years. While he is on sabbatical, the present elders would be responsible to reaffirm his return before he came back from sabbatical. It would say something like that. That's rough draft. That's all going to have to be edited and a lot of consideration given. But that's the way the amendment would look. I imagine that it could be something as small as a parenthetical statement under the category of pastor. Okay? But that's what it looks like. I'm not a big fan of radical transitions to constitutions. I think constitutions should be pretty set. I know that there are times where it's appropriate to adjust some things because times change, and I understand that. But I think constitutions are something that should be taken pretty seriously, not be changed without a lot of patience. So I think this is a minimal change to a constitution. After that, after the congregation votes on the constitution, so this would be constitutional, which is something I didn't stress last week, Amy. After that change to the constitution, then I would present to the congregation names of candidates. So we would stand and we would say, these are the men that we are going to ask you to consider. I think very confidently that this will be less than five. I think it will be more than one or two. But I am fairly confident that this is not going to be a group of 10 men. Okay? In fact, I'm almost certain of it.
Pastor, I have a question.
Yes.
Is age defining selection of those individuals?
Yes and no. The Bible doesn't stress age. In fact, Paul tells Timothy to not let congregations despise his youthfulness. So don't let them disqualify his youthfulness. The Bible also stresses that elders should not be novices. So they should first be proven. So I think it would be prudent for us to choose men who have had enough time to prove something. Okay? But we have to be careful not to discard young people. You know, evangelicalism can become an old man's game. And a lot of young people jump ship from some of our more conservative evangelical churches because they see no opportunity for ministry. Yeah, for growth. Mm-hmm. And so fundamentalism, which is my background, which I'm not thrilled with, depending on how you define fundamentalism, capital F, you know, ties, KJV, fundamentalism, is a really, really old man's game. In my first church in Jefferson, I would attend the fundamental meetings. And really, if you weren't 50, you almost weren't welcome. You know, you kind of, well, okay, you can have that seat, but if a real pastor comes in, you're going to have to move.
In the missionary line, that's different, it's somewhat different than this, but we have wonderful young people that grew up in this church and are on the mission field today.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their growth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that's a great illustration, actually. The mission, you know, I don't think we should consider missionaries less than we would consider the call for eldership. Because a missionary, to a larger degree, is going to have limited accountability. He's going to go to a field and be somewhat independent in his function. And so we have to be careful that we're not commissioning, you know, 22-year-old college graduates for missionaries to go and serve in Central America with almost no other Christian cooperation. But then tell elders, well, we need you to be 50 while you'll work here with us under our care and under this mutual accountability. That would be an unfortunate misconception.
I don't want my vision to be so narrow.
Mm-hmm.
That
in age?
Age would be a mm-hmm. defining.
That's a great point. That's a great point, yeah. I think probably for some folks, I'm 39. Yeah? I'm 39. And I think for some folks, that's very young. I think for some people, that's very young. I think the youngest pastor at IBC. So I know that we can tend to maybe stereotype or build, you know, did you use the word tunnel vision? Yeah. Yeah, so narrow in your perspective. Great, great question. Okay? So those names will come to the congregation. I expect approximately 4 weeks between the time you're informed of the names and the time you're asked to affirm those names. Okay? Approximately 4 weeks. I would encourage you, if you haven't already, to get to know those people, have them into your home, have lunch with them, talk to them after a service, write them a note with a question. Okay? I would encourage those 4 weeks to be very deliberate 4 weeks. Okay? Not just 4 weeks of waiting. Approximately 4 weeks. Then the congregation will be given a very specific ballot, similar to the ballot that you receive when it's time to elect a deacon. Now, in my mind, I am going to use different vocabulary for electing a deacon and affirming an elder. For me, and I don't know that this is grammatically required, but for me, election is choosing some from many. Affirmation is yes or no to the some. Okay? So when it's time to elect a deacon, you are voting for three of the six or three of the eight. When it comes time to vote for or to affirm elders, it won't be, I like these two more than these three, so these two are it. It will be, here are the list of three names. Do you affirm these three names? Okay, not these three. You need to pick three out of five. It won't be that way. That's the reason I'm using the word affirm rather than the word elect. It won't be an election where we're choosing one versus another. But that specific ballot we've spoken about, and I want to speak about it again today. That ballot is going to require that you put your name on the ballot. It's also going to require that if you say no to one of them, that you tell us why. Okay? The reason for that is because we want to know if you are saying no to this pattern of polity, or if you're saying no to that person because you know something we don't know. Okay? Maybe you're that person's neighbor, and you write, no, you've got to be kidding me. We have to shut the windows on the east side of our house to drown out the domestic violence and fighting that's happening. ... You've got to be kidding me! Exclamation point. Okay, we got a situation here. This person's not just against the Bible's indication for plurality. This person knows something we don't know. Okay, that's why. Okay, so we want to know, is this person on a ballot in the future? I don't like the word ballot. Is this person going to be recommended in the future? Or is this person off the list? Okay? So we want to know. We want to know.
Are you saying name on the ballot only if you say no, or name on the ballot if you say yes or no?
Get out of class. So are we saying name on every ballot? Or name just on the no ballot? What do you think? Well, multiple choice, and you said yes. Okay, name on every ballot? Just an opinion poll? I'm going to get your opinion, so please participate. An opinion poll, name on every ballot. Would you show me your hand? Okay, thank you. Thank you. I value your opinion. We are congregational eldership, right? So I value your opinion. Okay, name on every ballot to answer the question, Chris. Yes, please. Yes.
Rather than you doing this 4 people, during this 4 weeks, when the names are presented to us, if we have something to say about that, say a negative thing, that we know a negative thing, mm-hmm. something, I think it should be brought to the IDC administration. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. Let me repeat that very important statement. It's going to illuminate several other aspects of this process. Couldn't we, once this recommendation's been made, rather than waiting the 4 weeks to clarify the reason for no, couldn't we go to Mike or myself and say, I'm going to say no in 4 weeks. Here's the reason. Most definitely, that should happen. Now, if we get 100 ballots back on a certain person, and only 3 of those ballots say, I know of an immoral relationship in the recent past in this person, we are not going to conclude, well, 97% said yes. That's why this is not an election. This is an affirmation. So if 3 ballots come back and say, I know of recent immorality, before announcing the affirmation of an elder, we would have to vet that thoroughly. and prayerfully and carefully? So that's a great question that leads to a lot of clarification. Yep. There should be communication before there's a ballot in your hand. We're a family. And so that communication should precede ballots. Okay? And affirmation means that percentages don't determine, you know, 97% doesn't guarantee an in. If that 3% says, here's what I know. Okay? Any more question about that? Someone tell me what it is now. Is it two-thirds? Yeah, it would still be two-thirds. As I sit here today, this amendment would not change from two-thirds. As I sit here today, I am not recommending that you change that part. I'm going to clarify that with two things. First of all, as the deacons participate in this language, they may recommend that it be lowered for lay eldership. If they do, it would not be because we're trying to force an issue, but it would be because of a reality. Here's the reality. When our assistant pastor, whose name is Jeff, came to Greenwood 8 years ago, his vote was 100%. 100%. There wasn't a single no. I think I might have misspoke there. There were two no's. But I knew who they were, and I discredited it. So in my mind... Yeah, it was two of us, and it was 8 years of misery. I was right. I say such stupid things. It wasn't 100%, I have to clarify. But my recommendation at my resignation was that the congregation give him a term of trial and then affirm him as the lead elder or head pastor, however, whatever language you prefer to use for that position. So he's on that period right now. That's what he's doing. They have set a date for March 1st to cast a vote on affirming him as the next pastor. Just for clarification to the congregation that he's not just an assistant pastor who's now functioning like the preaching pastor. But while he got nearly 100% then, he won't get anywhere close to that the next time. And he knows that. In fact, so close that he's concerned about the two-thirds majority. You know the reason for that? They know him, and they don't have the luxury of idealism. Ignorance is bliss. So in 8 years, your affirmation of me would be lower than it was back in December. It would be lower. It would be lower. And I hope to be a better pastor for you 8 years from now than I was in December. But it will be lower. It's just a reality. So these lay elders have been with you for 20 years, 40 years, 60 years? No, they're all. No, I shouldn't say that. So these elders have been with you for a long time, and you know them really well. You know the good and the bad, and the fact that you know some bad removes your opportunity to be ignorant. And so you'll vote genuinely and honestly with some criticalness, right? That's just the way it's going to be. So if the deacons determine to lower that number from two-thirds to something like simple majority, it will be for that reason. But today, as we stand here, I have no suggestion to them that number be lowered, even though I know it will be a struggle. Okay, and I would tell those men, please don't expect 90%. They know you too well to give you 90%. They remember the day that you lost your patience and said something. It was 12 years ago. Okay? All right. I'm not criticizing. I just know. I know. Okay? I'm in that boat.
And I have a comment. So if men are put and recommended to the congregation, and the men that are married, I as a wife will be on the pedestal too to determine whether or not my would be a candidate for...
Oh, definitely.
You know, so...
If I understand your point correctly, I'm sorry I've interrupted, but I want to clarify and then hear the rest. If I understand your point correctly, anyone who accepts an invitation to be a candidate for lay elder, their wife should be considered in saying, yes, this is for our family.
Okay, help me.
Yes, great. Now, would you finish, please?
You
clarify. Okay. Okay. That's such a good point, and I can guarantee you that that is part of this process. Yes, definitely, definitely. This is not something that a man can set out to do on his own and his family go, well, I guess we didn't have a say in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please.
Great
question, too, because let's go ahead and move to the next point, okay? I want to move to this point, unless I have another question about specific ballot, which I think we covered. Okay? So this point. Since it's a four-year term, and since we're just inaugurating this, this addition to our ministry, we recognize that we can't give them all sabbatical in the fourth year. So our first item of business would be to invite the elders that be to say, I am doing this, but because of this family situation or because of this job situation, I would like to request the opportunity to be the first sabbatical. If I had three, what would I have to do? The second year, the first guy would get one? Year three, year four, year five. Yeah, okay. So he would say, you know, because of what's going on in my life, maybe after a year, he says, I would like to be the first sabbatical on year three. And so we'll have to stagger that for the first time. Then once we've set that stagger, then we'll have a natural stagger from there on. So yes, there has to be a qualifier here that says accept first terms, right? Great question. That has to be clarified. We're not going to send them all on year four. Okay, yes, please. Yeah, I'm really excited to, what would be the plans for then adding to this? So in other words, we're not going to say, okay, we've got four, now we're content. Because I'm really excited about taking the next gift God gives us. I believe, in my opinion, at present, there are more than three, there are more than four, there are more than five. But I don't want to overwhelm the congregation. I want to be patient with this process. I'm excited for God opening door for more. Very excited. Okay. But I have no calendar plan for adding that next one. Okay. Yes, sir.
Clarify your 4-year term. Do they serve 4 years and the fifth year is the sabbatical?
Yes. This is 4 years of service.
Okay.
Fifth year of rest. Well, from my experience, yes, that my answer to that would be yes. I put some thought into that, and that would be my conclusion. I think one of the things that we have to just acknowledge, I don't know if there's any way around it. You know, we really hamstring our deacons just a little bit. Because take Matt Ross, for example. I used him last week, use him again this week as an example. Matt is currently serving our church as the deacon for family life. Do I have that right? Family life? So Matt's responsible for planning things like the 4th of July picnic, probably some Christmas time events. We have a carry-in dinner. I don't know what to call it. No one knows what I mean when I say carry-in dinner, potluck. Oh, potluck. Okay. Well, see, I believe in the sovereignty of God, so the word luck is like a swear word for me. So, carrion? Is that a bird? Dead things. Really? Like roadkill? All right, let's call it a carrion then. It'll be cheaper. Okay, so Matt's responsible for all of that. Here's the thing. Matt will be responsible for that. Are you at the end of your life as a deacon? About to expire? Okay. So just about the time Matt feels like he's got a really good handle on the calendar and how it all unfolds, he'll be off. And next spring, someone else will come in and go, okay, what do I do now? I don't know if there's a way around that, but I hope that you can just acknowledge that that's a bit of a handicap for our deacons who serve in those roles. They serve for brief periods of time, and then they go. And so I think more than this will exhaust them, and I think less than this won't give them opportunity to get into their groove or their momentum, okay? So I think that's about where we want to be, to not exhaust, but to... Yes, please.
Speaking of deacons, will there be redefined at some point?
Well, there's some language in the Constitution that is slightly implicational that might have to be considered. So that's a possibility. But there is already a group of men, somebody would have to help me with who that is. There is already a group of men who are working on language to make a suggestion, just to clarify some points in the Constitution. Just one small thing that caught my eye as a candidate reading through the Constitution. The chairman of the deacons is referred to as the church chairman. You know, that's about all I can say to that. But so that's a little powerful language to me. I mean, that's kind of like a pretty bold statement. I don't think it was intended. I choose to believe it wasn't intended to be too much statement. But as a candidate who wasn't a part of IBC reading that, I went, wow, that's significant. Okay, so there might be some vocabulary changes in how we refer to function. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great question. Right from 1 Timothy 3. That's a fantastic question. What about that person's proof in family administration? And 1 Timothy 3 talks about, have they discipled their children? Have they brought their children to a knowledge of the truth? Have they proven themselves in being the administrators of their homes? So most certainly, children should be taken into consideration, as mine should have been 8 months ago, before you knew them, thankfully, and as theirs, who you know very, very well. You know the goods and the bads. And that's a fantastic question, and yes, most definitely should be taken into consideration. Yes, sir?
Two questions. First, talk sabbatical. What's the definition of that?
It comes from the word sabbath, so it means rest.
Okay,
it's to rest.
Oh,
how long? I am at this point suggesting a year. I'm suggesting 12 months.
Okay. The second thing, give us the same liberty on terminology that you're giving yourself.
Liberty. On length?
No, on terminology. You're going to change the verbiage to fit what you understand it to be. Give us the same liberty to have that same.
Yes. Can you give me an example?
As opposed to church chairman. I mean, church chairman did not mean to us what you thought it was.
Right. Which is why I say I'm choosing to think that the statement wasn't drafted to be that potent.
We didn't draft it with you in mind.
Right.
We also didn't call our senior pastors elders.
Mm-hmm.
Not because we didn't want to.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Right. I think I'm following you. We have discretion in vocabulary where the Bible hasn't established vocabulary. What I mean by that is to ask our deacons to be elders would be a contradiction of biblical vocabulary.
In the definition that
the Bible gives.
Yeah.
Correct. So we should have some discretion with vocabulary, both ways. Where the Bible hasn't established the vocabulary as non-negotiable. Correct? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Good. I'm here. 4-year term. 1-year sabbatical. Here's my exception. The reason I haven't said 12-month sabbatical is because it is possible that the church could fall in a very unique time in its history down the road. And I don't want to tell a particular elder who's intimately involved in that season or that issue, okay, 12 months from now, we'll pick up where we left off. But maybe he says, I'm going to postpone my sabbatical for 6 months and see if I can help lead to the end of this. And the other elders say, yes, that would be wise. Maybe he says, I'm going to take a 6-month sabbatical, but I see this issue's coming up, and I want to be back to help you with that. Would you accept that? And the other elders say, yes, we would all accept that. Okay, so I want to give us a little bit of fluidity with the calendar because I don't know what God's going to present us with as challenges for growth in the future. So I want to be a little bit fluid with these numbers. Okay? You go ahead, please.
My comment is that most mission organizations will only allow you to live overseas for up to 4 years, and then you have to come back.
Yeah, that's a great illustration of this tenure. That's a great illustration. You have to come home and catch your breath. Okay? Yes, please.
I have a question about function during sabbatical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I understand sabbatical, but I'm not sure if there are expectations during that time,
or if
they assume in the body and are refreshed in that way.
What would sabbatical look like is a summary of the question. What would we expect a sabbatical to include? Well, rest is number one. Number two, though, would also include refreshment. And that's going to come through work, study, reading, praying. And so we would expect the sabbatical to be very fruitful, not a season of laziness. So very fruitful. But all the meetings that are had, all the counseling responsibilities that will be given, teaching and preaching responsibilities should be extremely limited, while the library should increase. The prayer closet should get wore out. So that's a great question about what would sabbatical look like. It should not look like apathy or laziness. And it also, I believe, is going to include communication. I believe that there's going to be dialogue that happens. While we would almost prohibit that person on sabbatical from ever attending a meeting, almost prohibit. It would have to be an emergency, a crisis scenario where we would say, would you please come in on your sabbatical and meet with us? It would have to be an emergency situation. So that's a really, really good question. It should look like rest. But rest should include refreshment. They should come back more competent to shepherd than they left. Yes, please.
I would say that a shepherd who cares for his flock very rarely gets a moment to not consider his flock. So when they're out,
how do you know?
It's always part of the thought process.
Yeah.
Whether you're not going to a meeting, you're still wondering about this soul.
So the appropriate point is that they will never be disengaged. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yes, sir?
What are your plans for resources for talking about training young people?
Yeah.
The pastor has videos from the seminary class in Oregon.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. You've shared some of that with me, yes. It would be. So, I do. Yes, I do. So John has asked a great question about how will we better equip them? How will we fill their tool chest in order to serve us? Well, we have to see some of our contribution to them as an investment in ourselves, in our children, and in our grandchildren. And so whatever we put into them, we can expect that we will receive the benefit of. So I'm going to suggest just a couple things in way of example. First of all, I do think they should be afforded an opportunity for education. Okay, if they want to take advantage of that, I don't think it should be a requirement for eldership, but I think that we should try to make some increasing education an opportunity for them. Okay, I also think that we should give them study resource. So I'm going to ask the deacons in the future to give resources. I'm going to ask them to give resources. So presently, I'm getting into detail here. Yes. My answer to your question is yes. I have so many details, but I think they would only induce secondary conversation. Yeah.
Davis was the head of that, and we picked certain people out that said that, well, I don't know how to teach, so he had them go quarter of teacher training, and then they would take a class for a quarter, and then the teacher that was in the class would take the training also. And then in several years, we had two teachers for every class.
Yeah.
Helping.
It was an investment. Yeah, you were getting the benefits of what you had taken time, or in this case, maybe money, to contribute. Yes, great point. I thought I saw another hand. Yes, please.
I'm just wondering, does a congregation have to vote on whether we want elders or not?
Yes, the essence of that vote would come here. The essence of that vote would come here, okay? So we're expecting this amendment to include, I hope for sake of my own tenure that you do want elders. I feel very paranoid. Yes, that's right. That's right. The question really comes down at that juncture. The question really comes down to not do you want elders, because the church has always had elders. So the Bible uses the term pastor and elder interchangeably. It's the same word. Okay? So the question at that juncture is not, do you want to have pastors? Because that's been established. The question that you'll have to consider is, do you want pastors who don't require payment? Yeah. So I'm trying to make that really simple question. That's almost rhetorical. I hope this question becomes almost rhetorical. Of course you want pastors. You've had pastors in your 130 years of church history. You want pastors. The question is, do you want some that will volunteer their time? And I hope that question is almost rhetorical. I hope your response is, duh.
In training.
In training, yeah. Okay, good. Okay. Great. You know, I started this class 3 months ago by giving you a request to be patient and kind in your dialogue, and I'm thankful that that has been the case. So thank you for that. If you have any questions about this in the weeks moving ahead, please communicate those with me. What I would like to do at this point is, we have 5 minutes left, okay? Now, we're going to review some of this tonight in the fireside chat. We're going to review some of this tonight. So if you have more questions, you can be prepared for those tonight. What I'd like to do right now is divide the room up into smallish groups, okay? And have you close in prayer specifically, not taking requests, but specifically for God's glory in leading us as a church into the future. Okay? I don't know if the Lord's going to return in the next 10, 15, 20, 30, 100 years. I don't know. But I do know, until he does return, Emmanuel has a great privilege and responsibility as a lighthouse in Wausau, sending light to the nations. I know that that's true. And we should beg God to lead us patiently and full of his grace and providence. Yes, please.
One more little question.
Yes?
When the one person, they have four lay elders.
Yes?
Correct term, lay elders, not pastors, lay elders. Then one takes the sabbatical.
Mm-hmm. No, we'll be down one. That's great. We'll be down one.
But then the job responsibilities that he had over here
will have to be shared by the other men.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's gonna be hard.
It is, but I think it's worth it to give him rest, though. Okay. Somebody else taking his, you know, bear each other's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. I think it's going to be healthy for, whether that person is a lay elder or a paid elder, I think sharing responsibility is important. So lay elder or paid elder, both elders, lay and paid, I think we can just lift them up for a little while they rest. Okay? Good. Okay, so what I'd like to do is have maybe everyone from Julie forward. Maybe your group could meet. Dave, would you please lead them in prayer? And then would you please lead the front half of this group in prayer, maybe from Amy forward? And then Ty, would you mind leading that group in prayer? And then Clay, could you lead that group in prayer? And Chip, would you lead this group right here in these three rows in prayer? And then Stuart, could you please lead this group in prayer? John, would you mind taking that back two rows, please? Okay. And if you would please just pray for our church. So if you would lead that group in prayer. When you're done praying, please be dismissed. We got about 3 minutes. So just circle the wagons there and pray together.